Welcome back to Saturday Miss. We are indeed privileged to have the foremost authority on the religion of Islam with us, calling in from Europe. His name is IQ Al-Rasuli. He's written a multi-volume set called Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. We did exchange an email this morning, earlier today, the afternoon in Europe, on which of two topics we were going to cover today. And in the cross the pond arm wrestling IQ won. He wanted to discuss the president's obsession with his agreement with Iran, and I wanted to discuss the eighth surah of the Quran and how Badr makes Islam nothing more than a criminal enterprise. His topic is more timely than mine. And so, IQ, what's your take on the President of the United States as he seems obsessed with an agreement that is complete and total capitulation?
I would like to assert more, once more, that the worst enemies of the American European people are most of our own leaders in politics, academia, clergy, and especially the media.
Yeah, we agree.
Willfully and with malice aforethought, literally.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Deceive their listeners regarding the fact and reality of the existential threat posed to Western civilization by Islam and Muslims.
Yep.
I would like also to point out...
By the way, that is a powerful statement. Oh, what you're saying here is that while Islam is a deadly and destructive threat, and Islam may well be the single most deadly and destructive threat on Earth today, that there is a threat even worse and even more destructive and more deceitful and more deadly than Islam, if I'm listening to you correctly. And you're saying the threat is from the leaders in academia, in the media, particularly in politics, in the military, who are lying on behalf of Islam, misleading people on behalf of Islam, aiding and abetting this religion as it seeks to destroy the world. Is that
Absolutely.
What you're saying?
Absolutely. I would also want to point out also the following self-evident items. Why Obama should not have agreed to this utterly lopsided deal. A deal, by the way, totally to the advantage of the Ayatollahs, mm-hmm. without a single advantage to the USA. First and foremost, Obama has been reluctant to engage the enemies of America, such as the Taliban, ISIS, and Iran, for two crystal clear reasons. One, because he had already received the Nobel Peace Prize. As a man of peace, he would not do anything to go to war. He would do everything not to go to war. And not because I'm supporting war, but I'm explaining his reluctance. Item number two, because he had repeatedly asserted in his books, and for the last 7 years, acting out his thought processes, Barack Hussein Obama must bring down the USA from her exceptional level to that of the most despicable members of the United Nations. I know you disagree with America's, what they did in Afghanistan, what they did in Iraq, mm-hmm. but I'm not discussing that. Mm-hmm. I'm discussing the mindset of Obama.
Mm-hmm.
He is destructive. Contrary to all the bullcrap emanating from the mouth of the self-serving Muslim traitor-in-chief in the White House called Barack Hussein Obama and his lapdog, John Kerry,
mm-hmm.
this deal was opposed by most of the top-level military commanders, including chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Staff Dempsey. In fact, mm-hmm. I listened to one of the audio videos between Senator Joni Ernst, Republican from Iowa, in Congress in investigation, and they asked Dempsey about the deal. He said, I can tell you that we have given Obama a range of options. Of course, he called him the president. We gave the president a range of options. It wasn't a matter of either to go to war or to make peace, which is exactly the opposite of what Obama has been saying.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else also said something.
Yes. Obama has said that you either agree with my deal or you go to war. I mean, that's what Obama has said. That's kind of like Neville Chamberlain. We've achieved peace in our time. We've avoided war but through capitulation.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's exactly the Neville Chamberlain approach.
Yeah. The other one is the defense intelligence agency.
Mm-hmm.
The leader of the Defense Intelligence Agency, General Michael Flynn, was being interviewed by a Muslim in Al Jazeera, of all the places in the world. Al Jazeera was him. And he said, what we are making with the ISIS is a mistake. He said, I have been at war with Islam. He said that. He said to the interviewer, I have been at war with Islam for 10 years. And the interviewer told him, what do you mean with Islam? He said, yes, with the ideology. But he is not. He hasn't been at war with Islam. It is the other way around. Islam has been at war with all of us for the last 1,400 years.
Correct.
So even Lieutenant General of Michael Flynn of the Defense Intelligence Agency hasn't a clue. They really don't have a clue.
No.
They speak about radical Muslims as if they are shades of Islam. They don't exist. I mean,
correct.
This is the most remarkable thing. We are dealing with people who are running the show on our behalf, but they don't know what the hell they're talking about. By the way, did you know also, contrary to what Obama is saying, the Saudis, the Egyptians, the Jordanians, and many other Sunni Muslims are against the deal because Iran is Shia Muslim, their
right.
deadliest enemy.
Right.
Then
yeah,
he picks on the Jews.
Yeah, let me just stop you there. Are you aware of any other point of agreement between Saudi Arabia and Israel, who are, you know, Israel is not an enemy of the Saudi Arabians because the Saudi Arabians are Muslims, they're an enemy of Israel. Is there anything that they agree on other than that the Iran deal is total capitulation and therefore suicide?
This is the most remarkable thing. Obama has achieved an agreement, not only but with Saudi Arabia. By the way, a top-level ministry and defense department from Israel have landed in Cairo. I don't know if you know this. I got the email. They are meeting with the top-level people in Egypt, in Cairo, to coordinate together. And they are both on the same wavelength. They hate this deal. But Obama, being here who he is, he's a Muslim. So what does he do? He says, no, those who are opposing me, who are Jews, are against America. They are traitors to America. Bull crap. Absolute bull crap. He's using it to scare people. Schumer, Jewish. Another one is Jewish. By the way, they have 11 now. 11 Democrats are against the deal. 11. Not a huge number. But you know something? It's picking up. People are waking up.
Yeah.
It took 10 years.
Let's be clear about two things. One is that the deal is total capitulation. There is nothing that the world is getting. And for those who would say, no, they're transforming 90% of their bomb-enriched uranium into a different form. And what I would say is, first of all, a year ago, the assessment was they didn't quite have enough highly enriched uranium to make a single bomb, and now the president is saying they have enough to make 9 bombs.
Okay.
So, wow. So under the Obaminator's watch, not so good. Second is all they're doing is a chemical process that we went and described at length a year ago when they came up with the framework for a deal. All they're doing is a chemical process that can change the highly enriched uranium into a different form of highly enriched uranium. It's a chemical process that is not only easy to do, it's easy to reverse. So it gets you nothing. It's camouflage. It's like a chameleon changing the color of its skin. The second thing is that, yes, they're reducing a third of the centrifuges, but that is meaningless because it's the quantity of the centrifuges, not the output of the centrifuges that was listed. And so all you do is you get rid of the third that are the least productive, the least powerful, and you replace them, the remaining two-thirds with, as they have to every year, with more powerful centrifuges, and you increase your output rather than decreasing your output. And then they said, well, they're allowing inspections. Do you know how many days the inspectors must wait, even once they ask for permission, and even if a week or two later permission is granted, Do you know how long they have to wait before they can inspect a facility?
24 days. That's insane. That's going to a butcher's place, send them a letter, tell them, in a week's time, we are coming to see you clean up your act.
Yeah. Oh, of course. Of course. It's ludicrous. But I would say the ludicrous part of this is the ninth surah of the Quran. So I would ask you this question. Are the Iranians Muslims?
Yes.
Is the Iranian government guided entirely by the Quran and Hadith?
Yes.
What does the ninth surah, first verse, say?
Well, I don't know about the first verse, but I know about the...
How about if I read it for you? It says, freedom from obligations from Allah and His Messenger to those of the idolaters, the pagans, the disbelievers, with whom you have made a treaty.
Uh-huh.
Now, that is the noble Quran. I could read it in another Quran. It says, a declaration is in parentheses, of immunity from Allah and His Messenger to those of the pagans with whom you have contracted a mutual alliance.
Correct.
You prefer another translation, freedom from obligation from Allah and His Messenger towards those of the idolaters to whom you have made a treaty. There's two problems with this. One is that the wording is the grammar is so poor. It actually says freedom from obligations from Allah. So that's how it actually reads. Now, Muslims won't let you read it that way, so they change the grammar. The intent was to say that Allah and Muhammad, and they're one. And by the way, it's really interesting. This is supposed to be from God. Why do they give a hoot what Muhammad says? But when it's supposed to be freedom from treaties. Are Muslims. So a treaty between a Muslim and a non-Muslim, this is the intent of this, is not binding on the Muslim. So, why would any informed and rational person make a treaty with a Muslim?
If they are informed and rational, they wouldn't.
Right. Has the Ninth Surah been abrogated?
Yes.
Yeah, in fact, we will continue on this theme. There's more in the Ninth Surah that's interesting. It is rather astonishing that you'd have the second to the last surah revealed, the ninth surah of the Quran, begin by saying that that Muslims are not bound by any treaty or any commitment that they make with the non-Muslims. Didn't Jehovah etch in stone that you should not bear false witness?
Absolutely.
So how can this Quran confirm the Torah as the Quran claims? How can they be the same God as the Quran claims when Yahweh said, do not bear false witness?
Yes,
and this says, lie to non-Muslims.
Yes, because Allah is
and Yahweh are not the same God.
I'm not the God.
Yeah, that's right. Yahweh is actually God and Allah is not. Do you know why the ninth surah was proclaimed by Muhammad? Why did Muhammad make this statement?
Because he had to abrogate all the agreements he made with Mecca.
Right. The previous year, didn't Muhammad come down with an insufficient force, at least by his own assessment, to conquer Mecca?
Correct. And then he was humiliated.
Right.
He was made to sign a treaty that he didn't agree to, actually, but because he signed it to deceive, and when he had the upper hand, when he had more troops, he conquered them.
Right. So he needed his wannabe God to authorize lying.
Absolutely. And he did.
And so this, the first, and you know, if you're a Muslim, and you're not smart enough to process this just says that the Islamic prophet Muhammad, he's not a prophet, the Islamic messenger Muhammad, and Islam's wannabe God can't be trusted.
Of course. That's what it says. By the way, with all due respect, let me tell you something.
Yeah.
As we are speaking, Muhammad Zarif, the one who was signing the treaty with America,
right,
was in Lebanon this last week, or the beginning of this week, and he met with the leaders of Hezbollah.
Yeah.
And on television, Al Manar, which is Hezbollah television,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Zarif said in public, okay,
mm-hmm.
that the nuclear agreement between Tehran and the world powers created a historic opportunity for regional cooperation to destroy the Zionist entity.
There you go.
Israel.
Right. Of course. You know, and the most amazing thing of all is that anyone would negotiate with a Muslim as a head of state that would be ignorant of what the ninth surah of the Quran says about treaties between Muslims and non-Muslims. I mean, this is the topic, a treaty. The Quran says that a treaty between Muslims and non-Muslims is not binding on the Muslims.
Correct.
And so how could you, in good faith, negotiate with an Islamic country?
Only since this is a stupid person could do that. Only
correct.
Stupid. I don't say ignorant.
Stupid. Stupid. Yeah, stupid. Yeah, you have to be stupid. Because ignorant isn't, if you're going to be paid by a country to negotiate on its behalf, you can't claim ignorance. You know, it's just like if I commit a crime that I don't even know it's a crime because it's part of the text of a billion pages of the United States Criminal Code, my ignorance of the text of that code is not a defense.
Absolutely, it's not a defense. Ignorance is not a defense.
It never is. In fact, Yahweh said, my people are destroyed because of their ignorance. Ignorance is not a defense. But if you're negotiating with the most fundamentalist Islamic nation on earth, and you don't even bother to read what the Quran says about treaties between Muslims and non-Muslims, then you just have to be stupid. That, I mean, at that point, you're immoral.
It's against the American people.
Correct.
You're letting them down. Look, let's put it this way. Congress is sovereign, and it makes its own decision based not on what Israel needs, not on what Israel wants. It does it for the best security and well-being of the United States of America. Congress would only reject this deal if a big majority among the Republicans and many Democrats think that the accord is useless, full of holes, and hence needs to be thrown out with Obama.
Right.
That's the only way.
Now, let's also keep in mind that there is no way to preclude the Iranians from getting a nuclear bomb. It's going to happen.
There's no chance in hell, no.
Yeah, there is no way to preclude it. So the issue isn't, can we preclude Iran from getting a bomb? In fact, even the administration says, no, they're going to, if they honor this agreement, and if we're right, they're going to have a bomb in less than 10 years. And the reality is that they have enough uranium for 9 bombs right now. And that there is no purpose of the nuclear program other than to make bombs. That's the reality. But it can't be stopped. So then the issue is, if it can't be stopped, what is your best ploy? And the best ploy is to keep the sanctions, because
absolutely,
it keeps them from being able to acquire the military hardware that they're deploying in the Sunni and Shia war right now. Takes resources away from them.
$100 billion.
Correct. So, IQ, I think that our views are fairly similar on this. But since someone would say, okay, so if you don't have this agreement, that's what Obama's saying, then what? You've got nothing other than war. My sense is that with this agreement, what we do is prolong and intensify the war that America started between Sunni and Shia Muslims by giving Iraq to Iran, which is essentially what we did, and then through the Awakening Program, creating the basis for the Islamic State. That by doing this deal, we enable Iran to not only continue to finance this lopsided war, but also to equip itself to prolong the war and to make it more deadly. So it's with the deal we get more war, more death.
There's no question. I mean, look, Ronald Reagan said, trust but verify.
Mm-hmm.
But 24 days, no warning, by the way, after the 24 days. America has got to go to the United Nations. Good God.
Yeah.
It's going to this den of thieves.
Fair enough. But the big issue here, yeah.
It's taken another 24 years.
I don't even care about the verification. I don't care about anything in the agreement because of the fact Iran's going to have a nuclear bomb and multiples of them, regardless of what we do. So the only issue is to recognize that because of our invasion of Iraq and us giving your country, your birth country, Iraq to Iran, that we created an imbalance of power that has now caused this Sunni-Shia civil war that is being fought on one side by the Islamic State and on the other side by Iran, and that since Iran is outgunned 25-1 and outmanned 5-1, this deal, which enriches Iran and gives Iran access to the world's military hardware, simply exacerbates that war.
There's no question. We are going to face a nuclear war.
Mm-hmm.
Because these states, these Islamic states, they're mm-hmm. unstable.
Correct.
Each and every one of them is unstable.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, ISIS seems to have been using chemical weapons now in Iraq.
Yeah. Oh, you know, but what's going to happen when, I mean, the next target of the Islamic State, they bombed Baghdad for the express purpose of the same reason that America bombed Tokyo early in World War II. And that's just to cause the Iranians to have to deploy more assets around Baghdad to keep the people from panicking, because that's not where the Islamic State's going. The Islamic State's going to invade Jordan, and they're going to take over Jordan. And when they take over Jordan, what is the West going to do?
Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
But it,
absolutely
but it,
nothing.
But it puts the world at the precipice of world war the
absolutely.
Moment that happens.
100% guaranteed, I
right.
agree with you.
Right.
Yes.
So,
when the Hashemite king is finished,
mm-hmm.
this is beginning of war. There's no question about it.
Right.
Because they will become neighbors to Israel,
right.
and they will start attacking Israel, and Israel will retaliate. It's not, look, this is not going to be a conventional war anymore.
No.
Israel is outgunned by at least 130,000 missiles. At
right.
least 130,000
right.
missiles.
Right.
No nation on earth, no
can
nation on earth can, yeah. can defend itself. It's impossible.
Right. But, you know, also here, because of the nature of this and the fact that Iran and Syria are both clients of Russia and China... And the United States is on the Sunni side along with Europe, even though we're bombing the Sunnis in this war, which puts the United States in quite the fix here. We're against and allied with both sides. But what it does is separates the world powers and the nuclear powers of the world. So we're really the course that Obama is plain and is charting here is the exact same course that Neville Chamberlain plotted. It's an assurity of war, and this war will be World War III.
No doubt, honestly, no doubt. I mean, yeah. well, I'm comparing 1930s Chamberlain with Obama.
Right.
But
mm-hmm.
let's put it this way. In 1938, when Chamberlain went to meet Hitler, Hitler had the most devastatingly strong armed forces in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Today, in 2015, the most powerful nation on earth is America, and yet they sold lock, stock, and barrel to the Iranians. No reason. None.
Yeah. Well, that's the reality, and the reality is going to do exactly the opposite of what the Obaminator has been threatening. He's saying you either accept this agreement or you get war. We already have war. But the difference is Iran's going to have nuclear bombs either way. It's what do you do to the present Sunni-Shia war, this Islamic State versus Iran war? What do you do on behalf of the Shiites to help them counteract the fact that they're outmanned 5-1 and outgunned 25-1 when you give them this huge windfall economically and in terms of international trade?
At the moment, Saudi Arabia is approaching Pakistan. I mean, this is serious.
Yes.
To get not only the nuclear weapons, but also this the missile delivery
yeah.
system.
Yeah, let me tell you something.
To go to North Korea, who's starving for money.
But Pakistan already has the missiles. Saudi Arabia financed the Pakistani nuclear program. and they were given nuclear warheads, and they've already bought the delivery systems from the Chinese. Saudi Arabia is already a nuclear country, has been for a long time. That's why they booted the United States out of Saudi Arabia. Of that, I am certain. So not to worry there. They already have nuclear weapons. But IQ, there is something about the ninth surah that I want to pursue with you, because it's in the second and third statement. Are you aware of the single most common denominator amongst agnostics as to why they reject religion in general, but particularly Christianity and Islam? Let me share it with you, and this may resonate with you or may not, but I can tell you when I talk with agnostics, it is the common denominator amongst most agnostics as to why they reject the God of religion. Christianity would say that their God says, you either choose to agree with me or I'm going to torture you forever in hell. Islam says, you either agree with me, you submit to me, or I'm going to torture you forever in hell. There's only the choices in the Christian and Islamic religion of heaven or hell. And a good thinking agnostic would say, a God who says, you either capitulate to me or I'm going to torture you forever in hell, is sadistic.
Correct, I agree with
you. Okay. So that is the number one reason that most thinking agnostics reject Christianity and Islam. You're aware of that? Yep. Okay. Now, what's interesting here is that the Quran actually says that immunity is granted those idolaters by God and his apostle, with whom you have a treaty.
Yes.
Move about for 4 months freely in the land, 4 months, but they should know they could not escape God, and that God can put the unbelievers to shame. A general proclamation is made this day of the greater pilgrimage on the part of God and his apostle, that God is not bound to idolaters, nor is his apostle. It is therefore better for you to repent. If you do not, remember that you cannot escape God. So announce to those who deny the truth the news of a painful punishment. So here the Islamic God is saying exactly why there is no thinking person that has ever submitted to the religion of Christianity or to Islam. You either agree and you submit to me, surrender to me, or you're going to endure a painful torment. You can't be rational under those circumstances. That God is sadistic.
It doesn't give you free will.
Of course.
If there is no free will,
right,
that's not a God.
Of course. Not a God worth knowing.
The definition of God is gives you free will. Right. I'm giving you the commandments. I'm giving you the guidance. Right. You choose either to follow them or you don't follow them.
Right. You know, it's interesting. In the Torah, prophets, and Psalms throughout, Yahweh constantly presents the three options that are available for all of us, and we choose which one we want. And it's interesting that according to God, the vast preponderance of people, and it would be almost 99.999%, do not yet and do not choose eternal torment. There is no hell and there is no heaven, according to the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, according to Yahweh, for 99.9999% of people. What he says is that if you choose to reject the guidance I've given you, if you choose to be associated with a false God, if you choose to reject everything I have to say, no problem. When your earthly mortal life is over, your soul is gone. No punishment, no eternal torment, no hell. You just simply cease to exist. Period. Hit.
Correct.
No penalty. And he says that over and over and over again. It's 99% of people, 99.99999. So God's the real God says, you get to choose, and if you choose not me, that's just fine. No punishment, no hell. He's very clear. Hell exists strictly in its shield. It is a place separated from Yahweh. There is no light, so there's no fire. There is no torture, and Yahweh is not there. It's the opposite of Allah torturing people. There is no torture. There are no physical bodies. And what he says is that place is an eternal, lightless prison for those souls who have deliberately and knowingly led people astray. There has to be a consequence for knowing and deliberately misleading. So, you know, you and I are angry at politicians and clerics and media for misleading people. Well, so is God. And he says, for that, there has to be a consequence. That's what Sheol is for. Totally fair. Yeah, isn't that fair? And he says, if you want to be in a relationship with me, I've got a covenant. It's my family, and there are five terms and conditions to participate in my family and five benefits if you choose it. And he says one in a million chooses it. But it's your choice. And this thing in the ninth sphere.
Yeah. You have freedom to choose.
Right.
In Islam, there is none.
That's correct. In Islam, you have that very God who says, either submit to me, or I'm going to see to it that I torture you forever in hell. Thank you. Well, we're on the subject of being reasonable, rational, and the differentiating between the wannabe God of Islam, which is really Muhammad, and the actual creator God of the universe, Yahweh. You know that Yahweh says that he gave us four things that lead to the fifth if we process and use those gifts that he gave us appropriately. And you'd be interested to know what those four things are that lead to the fifth. Yeah. The first is that he gave us mortal life, conceived life. You know, DNA is a language. It's written. It's actually a three-dimensional language, a very sophisticated language. And he wrote the language of life. He gave us life. Mortal life. He gave us what he calls a nesoma. He says that the only thing, he says all animals have souls. A soul is your means, it's your consciousness. It's the means of being able, it's the difference between an animal and a plant. An animal can observe their surroundings and responds to it. That's a soul. So he says he gave all animals a soul. That's our mortal life. But he says he gave humankind, the one thing that he gave humankind, he didn't give any other animal that makes us like him, he says is a nesoma. And what nesoma means is conscience, the ability to exercise good judgment, the ability to discern between true and false, right and wrong, good and bad, to make good decisions. So he gave us the ability to process information that we observe so that we can make a good decision. The third thing he said he gave us was free will. Now, free will doesn't do you any good unless you can process information so you can make an intelligent decision. So he gave us all three of those things. The fourth thing he gave us is the Torah, and the Torah means guidance. So now you have something to look at for guidance, so that you can exercise your free will after you process the information so that you've made a determination as to whether or not you can trust it.
Okay.
In this mortal life. The fifth thing is that guidance points you in direction of the ultimate gift. But it's a gift only given to those who use those first four gifts to capitalize upon it. And that's the Bereth, which is a family-oriented covenant relationship. Bereth is based on Be'eth, which is family and home. And in his Torah, he prescribes these are the five conditions. He lays them out with Abraham. These are the five conditions to participate in the covenant. If you want to participate, act upon these things. And if you do, he offers five benefits. Immortal life, perfection, adoption into his family, enrichment, and empowerment. Seems like a pretty reasonable thing to do if you were God.
Yes, but when I'm comparing it with what Allah wants, which is death or destruction,
yeah.
Or sorry, death or submission, groveling, right. groveling 24 hours a day.
No, it's worse than that.
I
no, that's not what Allah is offering. That's what we just read, the ninth surah. It's not what Allah is offering at all. Allah is, the choice is, total and complete surrender to Him. Or eternal torture by Him.
True. But this surrender comprises killing other people.
Correct.
Raping them, plundering
Correct.
Them, deceiving them.
Correct.
Everything negative you can think of, Allah right. is ordaining it.
Right. Correct. That is correct. It is the most sadistic, demonic deity ever conceived in the warped mind of man.
Because it was Muhammad.
Correct.
This is Muhammad. Muhammad was speaking. You know something? Humanity has been studying the subject of Quran for 1,400 years.
Mm-hmm.
Thousands of millions have been studying it. Do you know not a single one of them points out the one fact? That it is only the words of Muhammad. Nobody is an eyewitness to the events. Not a single event is eyewitnessed by anybody.
No, you said that. I said that. It's obvious.
It's
obvious.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I know it's obvious, but it's so blatant.
Yeah.
Not a single one of his wives, not a single one of his companions said they ever heard Muhammad talk to the angel Gabriel.
Of course
not. Or seen the angel Gabriel talk to Muhammad.
Of course.
So all we have is the words of a man saying, hey, I am messenger of Allah, believe in me.
Right. And by the way, this is a perfect revelation directly from God. So if it's a perfect revelation, how many mistakes would you have to find in it?
None.
So it could be none. So if there's a single mistake, he was lying.
Of course.
So when they found the oldest copy of the 18th surah, and it confirms that Muhammad claimed that the two horns, Alexander the Great, went to extraterrestrials in a muddy spring where the sun goes nighty-night, would you call that a mistake?
Yes.